Welcome to the Arlington Street Church podcast. Founded in 1729, Arlington Street continues today as a gathering place for progressive people of faith in the greater Boston area and beyond. We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Please visit ascboston.org for more information about this historic Unitarian Universalist congregation. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.
A reading from Part 2, Act 5, Scene 8, Angels in America by Tony Kushner. But I saw something only I could see because of my astonishing ability to see things. Souls were rising from the earth far below, souls of the dead, of people who had perished from famine, from war, from the plague, and they floated up like skydivers in reverse, limbs all akimbo, wheeling and spinning. And the souls of these departed, they joined hands and clasped ankles and formed a web, a great net of souls that were three-atom oxygen molecules, the stuff of ozone. And the outer rim absorbed them and was repaired. Nothing's lost forever. In this world, there is a kind of painful progress, longing for what we've left behind and dreaming ahead. At least, I think that's so. This awkward thing happens to me because I'm a chaplain. A few times a year, I walk into a patient's room, I introduce myself, and the patient nervously laughs and says, "Am I dying?" Most of the time, the answer is no. While a large part of my work as a chaplain is caring for those who are dying and their grieving loved ones, I can confirm that I am not the Grim Reaper or an omen of death. In fact, much of the work I do is providing care to people whose spiritual crisis is that they will live. Just in the past few weeks, I met many adult children who were learning to live after one of their parents had died. I met a mother who creates daily rituals to remember her daughter who died before her second birthday. And I met a man in his 40s who has been living with ALS for 9 years. The spiritual crisis, the reason why we need a chaplain or a minister or a spiritual community, is not that we're dying, but that we are living. Buddhism offers us these five remembrances for life. 1, I am of the nature to grow old. There is no way to escape growing old. 2, I am of the nature to have ill health. There is no way to escape having ill health. 3, I am of the nature to die. There is no way to escape death. 4, all that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. And 5, my actions are my only true belongings. I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. My actions are the ground upon which I stand. When I first heard the five remembrances, I could not deny that they were true, but I did not want to spend too much time thinking about them. They're a bit of a downer. Now, years later, as I make my way from patient room to patient room, I see the truths that they tell on the faces of my patients who cannot escape illness or death or loneliness or loss. I feel more connected to humanity than ever through our shared struggles. We are all barreling through life, some of us peering through our hands like we're watching a scary movie, others just swinging our arms at anything that's going to come at us. Like the nervous laugh from the patient who asks, "You're a chaplain? Am I dying?" I find myself awkwardly embracing the fact that we all ask the same questions, even when the answer is not yes or no, but now or later. I think about how, though we are all of the nature to grow older, many of us do not grow old. I know for myself and many others, the sharp pain of grieving someone who died young is what led us to seek spiritual community. I also think about how, while we are of the nature to have ill health, in the past half century, we've seen two new viral pandemics, AIDS and COVID-19, proliferate, killing millions. As we watched the death tolls climb, we saw people who did not care, who blamed the dead and the dying. We saw religious leaders, politicians, and neighbors who actively withheld research, medication, and safeguards that could have prevented more death. Why? Why so much greed and cruelty and just as disturbing? Why so much apathy? After the election, I find myself asking these same questions again. Why so much greed and cruelty? Why do people, so many people, live with no concern for the well-being of others? It makes life so much harder for all of us. Today, heavy with all that we have survived, then and now, I look to the fifth remembrance, that our actions are our only true belongings. We cannot escape their consequences. They are the ground upon which we stand. When I feel discouraged or lost to what my next action should be, I turn to the stories of those who, when faced with something similar, made courageous choices and definitive action. People like Spencer Cox. Writer and journalist David France writes about his friend Spencer in the book, How to Survive a Plague, the inside story of how citizens and science tamed AIDS. This is what he writes. Few people personified the epidemic's long history in America more than Spencer. A college dropout, he was just 20 years old when he got his grim diagnosis. Given only months to live, he threw himself into the activist group ACT UP, becoming a central player in the movement's Treatment Positive Data Committee, where patients and their advocates puzzled through the science of virology, chemistry, and immunology. Their insights won them audiences, then respect, then working partnerships. It was the first time patients had joined the search for their own salvation. France goes on to write about the first time he met Spencer. In the winter of 1988, he brought me his latest lab results to help describe how certain experimental drugs that were thought to work actually routinely failed. We met in a dark coffee shop late in the morning. Short and smooth-faced with dark eyes and floppy black hair, he arrived Brando style in industrial work boots, jeans as tight as a sunburn, and a black leather bomber jacket over a white t-shirt, the uniform of ACT UP. His youth disarmed me. He looked like a teenager not yet able to grow a beard. But he displayed a researcher's grasp on his own cellular tapestry and a facility for rendering complex immunological principles into everyday language. Spencer's research and charm got him into the rooms of the biggest names in AIDS research, including Dr. Anthony Fauci. He worked to help develop standardized treatments and regimens that saved an estimated 8 million lives. And he did not stop there. As Spencer and his friends began to receive treatments that proved effective in extending their lives and treating their symptoms, he saw a new condition that was plaguing his community: the depression, isolation, and trauma of survivor's guilt. Spencer worked hard to mobilize support for himself and other survivors. When he was turned away by the same researchers who had talked to him previously and could not receive funding, he began organizing local support groups. Spencer continued to attend and develop these support groups. But those exact illnesses that he was trying to treat in himself and in his friends, HIV, depression, and PTSD, they were taking a toll on him. After 2 decades of advocating for himself and countless others, Spencer died. His memorial service was held at the Cutting Room on East 32nd Street in Manhattan. As the leaders of the movement joined together to honor their friend and comrade, they were welcomed by drag queens dressed as Joan Crawford and Spencer's favorite, Bette Davis. Spencer's friend and fellow activist, Peter Staley, offered these words: "While many of us by luck or circumstance have landed on our feet, all of us in some way have unprocessed grief or guilt or an overwhelming sense of abandonment from a community that turned its back on us and increasingly stigmatized us, all in an attempt to pretend that AIDS wasn't a problem anymore. That is Spencer's call to action, and we should all take it on." Spencer was one of many people who worked hard to find a treatment for AIDS, and the treatment that is needed is more than just a medication regimen. I believe this call to action applies to me. It applies to all of us who are listening and paying attention on this World AIDS Day. As we honor those like Spencer Cox who fought for medical treatments and mental health support, surpassing all expectations of what a 20-year-old college dropout theater kid could do to influence federal regulations and civic life, we must also hear this call to keep going. We need one another, not because we are dying, but because we are living, and living is hard. But it is also beautifully bright and full of possibility. Our actions are our one true belongings. May we use them to care for one another. May we show through our actions that greed, cruelty, and apathy may win some elections, but will never conquer our souls. How? By not letting our fear of aging, sickness, and death separate us from one another. With the generosity of our time, our love, and our resources. Yes, for those who continue to live with HIV, and also for our trans community members, our undocumented neighbors, and for anyone whose humanity, whose human right to health care and dignity is forcefully and systematically denied. You can start anywhere. Sign a petition, write an email to your state representative, donate to a mutual aid fund, visit a friend who is struggling with depression or grief. Learn more about a cause you care about that you're passionate about and share that with someone else. Our actions are our only belongings, the only thing that we can control. In our reading today from Tony Kushner's play, Angels in America, the souls of the dead fly into the sky, joining hands and create a net of souls that repairs the hole in the ozone layer. As we enter this season of angels and candlelight, may we remember that we are held up, supported, and affirmed by people who loved us so much, some without ever knowing who we would be, that they dedicated their life to the promise of ours. May we have the courage to do the same, trusting that we will not do it alone. May it be so. These are the words of writer Mae Sarton. "Help us to be the always hopeful gardeners of the spirit, who know that without darkness, nothing comes to birth, and without light, nothing flowers. Love is the spirit of this congregation. May love hold us until we all meet again. Let us keep this faith, beloveds, and pass it on. The service begins when the service ends. Bless your hearts. Amen." Two, three, four.
Where you go, I will go, beloved. Where you go, I will go. Where you go, I will go, beloved. Where you go, I will go. For your people are my people. Your people are mine. Your people are my people. Your divine, my divine. Where you go, I will go, beloved. Where you go, I will go. Where you go, I will go, beloved. Where you go, I will go. For your people are my people. Your people are mine. Your people are my people. Your divine, my divine.
Please visit ascboston.org for more information about this historic Unitarian Universalist congregation. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.